Journey to the River Sea, Chapter 11. By the time Clovis had been in Finn's hut for 3 days, he knew Westwood by heart. He could go upstairs and downstairs, into the attics where the maid Bella had hidden Bernard's secret pile of money, and into the cellar where he had made friends with the bats. He knew the outhouse where Bernard had kept a pet rat, and the tree to which Dudley and Joan had tied a little girl from the village and beaten her with willow twigs, because she had been trespassing by the lake, and he could imitate any accent. After he's been there for a week, he'll be talking like Sir Aubrey, or braying like Joan, Finn said to Maya. The Goodleys had taught Clovis to fence, and he had been in so many plays setting grand houses that his table manners were excellent. If he got to Westwood, Finn was sure he could hold out for a little while. Finn had shown him a map of the north of England, and Clovis discovered that the village where his foster mother lived was only 30 miles away, which had cheered him up a lot. "But he's such a coward," Finn said to Maya. They were scraping the old paint off the Arabella's deck fittings, a job which Clovis did not care for. "I don't think it's cowardly to be afraid of hiding in a dark cellar and awaiting to be snatched by 2 horrible crows, said Maya. Finn frowned. "You're always defending him," he said crossly. "Well, he's alone in the world."
"So am I in the world," said Finn.
"No, you aren't. You've got Lila, who adores you, and Professor Glastonbury, and the Chief of Police, and all the Indians here. And when you get to the Zante, you'll probably have lots and lots of relatives. Aunts and uncles and cousins, and maybe grandparents too. A huge family."
"Do you think so?"
"I hadn't thought of it like that." Finn did not look particularly pleased. Maya nodded.
"It's sure to be like that, whereas Clovis and I don't have anybody. You've got Miss Minton."
It was Maya's turn to stare now. 3 months ago, she hadn't known that Miss Minton even existed. When she'd first seen her, she thought she was a terrifying witch. But now, there was a pause. Then,
"And you've got me," said Finn.
Maya lifted her head and smiled at him. For a moment, she felt completely happy. Then she looked at Finn's hand resting on the tiller. "But you're going away."
"Yes," he said, "that's true. I'm going away."
Later that night, when Maya was back in the bungalow and Finn was frying some eggs Furrow had bought for their supper, Clovis said, "There's something I want to ask you about. When I was looking for Maya the first time, I asked for a place called Taffarini, or the House of Rest. Maya told me that that was what it was called and that Mrs. Carter had had it on her notepaper. But no one had heard of it, and they looked sort of funny. And then the captain of the boat wouldn't put me down on the Carter's landing stage. He said it was a bad place.
What did he mean?"
Finn sat back on his heels. He seemed to be wondering whether to speak or not. And then he said, "I'll tell you, but you must promise to say nothing to Maya." And he told Clovis what had happened when the Fat Carters first came to the Amazon. They found an Indian longhouse by the river and some thatched huts back in the forest. The land and the houses belong to Tapuri, which is the tribe to which Furrow and Tappy belong. But many of the Indians had left to find work in the town, and the elders of the tribe agreed to sell the land and the houses on it to the Carters. The price was agreed before witnesses. A proper ceremony took place, and Mr. Carter signed the document to which the old chief put his mark. And Tapuri asked that the House of Rest, which was what the longhouse had been called, should be left standing, because a very wise medicine man had died there, and his spirit still lived in the house and did not want to be disturbed. Mr. Carter agreed to everything. Good land by the river was hard to find, since so many Europeans had come to Manhouse to make their fortune, and the rubber trees and the surrounding forests were plentiful. The money was to be paid to the Indians in 3 lots. Mr. Carter paid the first lot promptly in gold coins,
fetched from the bank, and the chief of the Tapuri thanked him and took his people to build themselves homes further up the river. A month later, the chief's messenger came for the second lot of money and was sent away. Mr. Carter, he was told, was waiting for more gold to come from the Bank of England in a special ship. The messenger went back into the forest and came again a month later. He was told that the ship with the gold on it had sunk in a storm. And so it went on. The Indians began by being polite and ended up by shaking their fists at the carters. Those Europeans who knew what was happening went to the chief of police, who tried to force Carter to pay for what he owed. But Carter always found an excuse not to do it. Not only that, but he broke his word to the Indians and pulled down not only the surrounding huts in the forest, but the longhouse itself. And on the site, he built his bungalow. Mrs. Carter had Tafarini, or House of Rest, put on her writing paper. She thought it sounded good, but no one in Manhouse ever called it that. Nor would the Indian trader landers or the Carters. They wouldn't land on the Carter's landing stage, but always, like the captain who had brought Clovis here, stopped higher up. And the many decent Europeans who knew what had happened tried to have as little to do with the Carters as possible. After this, not many Indians would come to work for the family. Those who did, Furrow and Tappy and old Lila, stayed for personal reasons. Lila, because she wanted to be near Finn and his father. Furrow, because he was her nephew. Conchita, because she had a crippled brother to support in Manhouse. And when they worked in the house, they were unforgiving and sullen. And secretly, they believed that one day the old medicine man's spirit, which had been disturbed and shamed, would rise up against the Carters, and the family would get what they deserved. Clovis had been listening to Finn with a very worried face. But that's the sort of curse. Maya shouldn't live in a house that's been cursed. I know, but nobody has cursed Maya. Nobody in the world would do that. And Furrow and the others have promised to look after her. They absolutely promised. And you're not going to tell Maya? No, definitely not. She's got enough to put up with those awful twins. Mrs. Carter had at last arranged Maya's piano lessons with Netta's father, Mr. Holtman. Maya went to his house before the dancing class while the twins were shopping with their mother so she could enjoy it and not have to pretend that learning the piano was boring. If there was one thing the twins really hated, it was if Maya seemed to be enjoying anything. Mr. Holtman came from Vienna and he was the first classical musician there. He not only taught Maya the piano, he understood her need to learn the songs she had heard everywhere, in the streets of Manhouse, on the riverboats, and in the huts of the workers. It is a rich land for music, Brazil. Everything flows into everything else. In one song you can hear the rhythm of the Africans, the poetry of the Portuguese, and the sadness of the Indians. He promised to look for songs that she had written down, and he suggested too that she had singing lessons to train her voice. But this she wouldn't do. My mother was a singer. She was wonderful, and I don't want to try to copy her, she said. The other good thing which came out of her time with the Altmans was Netta's friendship. The Austrian girl welcomed her wholeheartedly. She had a litter of kittens in a basket, a basset hound with soulful eyes, and a baby brother as fat as butter. Netta walked with her afterwards to the dance class, and Maya forgot to put on her gloomy face, and when she saw the twins sitting with their legs stuck out in the locker room, waiting to have their shoes put on, she was in trouble. "What are you smirking about?" asked Beatrice. "Now, I suppose you're waiting for Sergei to ask you to dance." The twins' plans for getting rid of Maya were not going very well. They had been to her room and picked over her things, but Miss Minton had heard them, and since themselves never went outdoors, it was difficult to spy on Maya properly. The notice of the reward for the capture of the taverner's son was still on the hoardings, but time was running out now. Mr. Lowe and Mr. Trapwood were supposed to be leaving on the bishop in 3 days' time. Sergei did ask Maya to dance. Not only that, but he asked her to a party. "It's on Friday night. It's for Olga's birthday. I know it's very short notice, but my father has to go to Belem and the next day, and we want him to be there." Maya hesitated. Friday night was the night Clovis was to hide in the museum. For her to be in Manhouse then would be perfect if she was to betray Clovis to the twins, but only if the twins were there as well.
"I'd love to," she said, "but I don't think I can come without Beatrice and Gwendolyn. I'm sort of their guest, you know how it is."
Sergei looked mulish. "They're horrible. I hate them. But if you won't come without them, I'll ask Olga." Olga also disliked the twins, but she too said that if Maya wouldn't come without them, she'd better bring them along.
"If Miss Minton comes too, it ought to be all right," said Sergei.
"She'll keep them in order, and she gets on well with our Mademoiselle Lille. And there's no trouble about getting you home. My father will send you back in one of our boats." The Kaminskis were one of the richest families in Manhouse. Sergei's father, Count Kaminski, owned huge plantations of rubber trees. He treated his workers well, and the money flowed in, not only from rubber, from hardwoods and coffee and sugar cane. Maya had passed their house, a big mansion with pink walls and blue shutters, and a garden full of flowering trees. They couldn't be anywhere better for a party. If the twins were pleased to be invited, they didn't show it. Only Mrs. Carter's eyes gleamed. She hated the Russian family, but a count was a count, and who knew what might come out of it for the girls.